You're on 98.7 FM, Your Story Counts with Nan and Simone. How are you, Nan?
Very good. How are you, Simone?
Good,
it's good to see you. It's great to get on radio, isn't it, RPP, just so I can hang out with you for an hour.
I know. Hey, very privileged.
Just a little bit of time out of work, really.
Exactly. We're heading for a top of 13 degrees today. Actually, when I wrote this, because I looked at the weather yesterday and it said that it was going to be raining.
Oh. Right?
So then when I looked at, got up this morning, the sun was shining, it was beautiful. So I scrubbed out raining.
Yeah.
Because.
You've made your own assessment.
That's right. But now it's cloudy again.
The weather, according
Melbourne.
To Simone.
Exactly. I have that power.
Yeah.
Anyway, so now it's cloudy.
Yeah. Oh. Well, but anyway, we'll keep assessing throughout the hour, depending on what's
right.
happening outside the window of RPP.
Exactly. We love talking weather.
We do. So, you're our own little weather girl.
How was your weekend?
It was good. Yeah. Yeah. It was fabulous. I guess it was so cold down here. Mm. If anyone's listening from interstate or international, I can tell you Melbourne wasn't the place to be.
No. But I had a roaring fire going for 2 days straight.
Mm.
Just stunning. Just a real fire,
yeah.
Not the ones, gas ones.
Yeah.
A real true fire with wood that we'd cut from the back of our property.
Yeah.
So it was amazing.
That part was fantastic. It was just that excuse, so you just can't do anything.
Yeah, because the ducted heating just was so not working because
no.
we've got glass everywhere.
Mm.
So it just was, you know, going out the window. So turn that off. And it was like living in the olden days where you just had fire.
Oh, the snow bunnies are pretty happy.
Yeah.
Yeah, all those people heading up to, you know, Buller and, you know, wanting to do some powder snow skiing. I think it's all happening up there. But I'll go for the sun every time.
I know.
Yeah, that's
so,
my thing.
We just want to thank our listeners who are downloading our podcasts. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it is. We've been so supported.
I know.
RPP, Your Story Counts on Facebook. If you are curious and want to listen back on the show, if you'd like to listen to the show twice.
That's right, you can.
You can.
You can listen to us as many times as you like.
Yeah, for sure. Mm. Just all you need to do is tap into that on Facebook and you can listen in the car or anywhere you want to. So it's kind of fun.
Now, on today's show, we have a very special person, Les Price, author, transformational coach and intuitive in the studio. Now, I'm so looking forward to this story. And I love Facebook because I posted and shared that we're having Les on the show today. Mm. And one of my Facebook friends says, I know Les. I've worked with Les. He's a wonderful person.
Yeah.
And I think it's fascinating. Actually, every time you've brought on a guest, one of my friends on Facebook know that person. So there's always
this
degree
network
of separation.
Going on. Yeah, yeah, and that connection. And that's what we're all about, aren't we? Just letting everyone connect in. And
She's very excited because she's going to be listening today to you, Les. So very much looking forward to that.
Fabulous. Now, as we know, we love to start with a song.
Yes.
And one particular song that Les chose was What About Me? It's an oldie but a goodie. We love this.
Yeah.
Moving Pictures. So let's have a listen. Here we go.
What About Me? Your Story Counts. That's Moving Pictures. You're on 98.7 with Nan and Simone. And in the studio, we have Les Price, author and transformational coach and intuitive. Welcome.
Thank you, Simone and Nan. Great to be here. And what a wonderful weather day we're having too.
I know.
It's good to see we're getting weather reports on the go.
That's right. Yeah, we're putting our finger out going, yes, I think it's about 5 knots now.
Yeah, I'm going to look
building up to 20 knots.
I'm going to look forward to see what it's like within the hour.
Oh, I think.
Why they called it knots and just not waves or something?
Yeah.
Because it's not a knot.
No, it's not a knot.
I know, it's just
not
right. Anyway,
oh my God,
it's all
poor
about
Les.
You.
But anyway, yeah, your poor thing with us today.
Yeah.
Hey, now you've got a great story, so I want to really get into it.
Yeah.
Now it all started for you in Africa, Nairobi.
It did, and it actually, you know, if I really think about it, we go back years before that. It was actually my great-great-grandfather. Really started with him. Now, he was English. He somehow got conscripted in the British Army, went off to India to fight in the Indian Mutiny, and I suppose at the end of his whole journey of leaving England, he decided to live there, and that's where he married and kind of grew up, and my great-grandfather grew up as well. And so it was a whole journey from there. But I suppose during that period, one thing that really happened was that people were looking for work, and a lot of these Anglo-Indians, as we call them back then, you know, decided that Africa was a great place because there was a lot of industry, there were the shops, and they really migrated to Africa, and that's really how my parents were born in that country. So
that's quite amazing, incredible journey. Isn't it? Mm. I remember because I travelled through Africa when I was in my early 20s on my own.
Mm. That wasn't that long ago now.
Yeah, no, that was just the other day. Yeah. Although I think it's probably a little bit more you know, dodgy than it was you know, back then. Yeah, and I remember, you can imagine my poor parents, because I suddenly said, right, I just need to go and see Daphne Sheldrick, who happened to be the lady that managed all the elephants. She had a elephant orphanage over there.
Gorgeous.
So I got on a plane all by myself and said, that's it, I'm off. And turned up at Nairobi Airport. And it was just incredible from a 21-year-old point of view. It was just a shed with a couple of very tall guys with machetes.
<Yeah. laughs>
And that was the beginning of my my journey in Nairobi.
Yeah, it would probably change quite a bit since the time I was there.
For sure.
Yeah, so it's, yeah, it's incredible.
Mm, fantastic. So you travelled a little bit with your family too, up and down the coast. Is that the east coast of Africa?
I did, yeah. It was interesting because, you know, my father was an accountant in the railways. He kind of followed on from my grandfather. My grandfather had a huge influence in that whole community, in that whole area. He ended up being the head of the main union for the railways, oversaw a lot of people and was really highly respected through that whole journey and his work with the communities and helping develop people. But from what I understood, he was also somebody that people could go up to. He had the heart to actually understand them and what was going on.
And connect with them.
And to really connect. And, you know, because a lot of them were foreigners living in an African country where they didn't even speak the national language. So a huge influence there. But with my father, you know, he ended up being an accountant, followed his father into the railways, as most of the family kind of did. Mm. And that's where he met my mother, who was a personal assistant. And so we spent many a time in those early years travelling up and down the East Coast. And, you know, I was probably only about 1.5, 2 years old, so I don't remember a lot of it. But I hear the stories, and, you know, it was a huge cultural uplift for them because they had community, huge family connections in that region. And, you know, they were really happy. You know, they lived really happy lives within that community.
There's something very, very special about Africa, isn't there? I think, you know, it gets into your blood and into your heart. Mm. Yeah, there's a big heart chakra energy over there. But a big change for you, though, because at a very early age, you found yourself transferring across to Chelsea.
Yeah, it was a long, long swim for me.
That's right, it was.
Yeah,
couldn't catch the train either.
That's right. It was a big shift, you know, coming all the way to Australia and to Chelsea. And, you know, I give credit to my father for the real decision to make that shift, because obviously in 1967, Nairobi and Kenya went through independence. And people didn't know what was going to happen. You know, there's a lot of instability after the British left. And so my father, you know, was kind of thinking ahead, you know, what will we do with the family? And thankfully he had a sister who'd already moved here with her partner. But he thought for many years, and it was a tough decision because while he was there, he also got another job with a Japanese company. And in that time of applying, you know, to migrate to Australia, which, you know, if you think of the time, there wasn't anyone else out here. There was no family other than his sister. Big choice and decision.
A bit scary.
Yeah, scary. So he made that, and it took a couple of years. And then even when it came to time to leave, when 2 years was up and they had to make a choice, he was stuck because his heart was in Africa with the family. And he used to run big community groups and did a lot of work with different churches and all. So huge shift. So I give credit to that, and ended up in Chelsea, as Simone said earlier. You know, by the railway line again. You know, so can't get away from this
railway line theme here.
Maybe it's a travelling journey. You know,
that's right. It's that moving pictures thing that ties into the first song.
Exactly, the moving pictures theme. Travelling through this.
I know you can't get that now, but I get it.
I'm with you.
Up on the train with me.
Yeah, okay.
So, that's, you know, that's where we ended up. And it was only because of my dad's sister who'd actually, you know, settled down in Chelsea too. So huge shift culturally, but at least we had some people there when we arrived. And you can kind of imagine what it's like for people when they come from another country and don't have all of that connection.
And for you, although you're very young, do you still recall some sort of, you know, relocation kind of feeling from being in sort of, you know, such a, like you say, a big worldly sort of cultural sort of environment to coming to a place that felt very foreign?
Look, Look, probably the greatest shift was, you know, coming and going to school in Australia. Because,
yeah,
I remember one day, my mum tells this story really well. She says, you know, one day I'd gone out playing with some of the young kids because it was a whole new area, all new developed estates, and there were lots of really young children in the court. And I remember going one day and I told this whole story about how we used to have dinner with the lions and, you know, how I had a pet chimpanzee and all these other stories. And the next thing you know, about an hour later, there's this mother knocking on our door, coming to talk to my mum to say, is this really real? Did you really do that? You know? So you can kind of look at the extremes of, you know, coming from, you know, that
the
TV
adventure.
Show, you know, was it Daktari?
Yeah, I remember that.
Which had that lion with the cross eyes.
Yeah, yeah.
It was that, coming from that sort of background and then coming to live in Australia where it was, you know, such a different culture and environment. So, you know, that you talk about shift, big shift.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Did you find school life like,
I was going to say,
you know,
the same thing. Yeah.
How did you find school life? Just because I have spent so much time in Africa, I could just imagine how different it would be. You know, even the school life over there compared to the school life here, did you find that it was sort of like, did you get to know the kids? Were the kids accepting of you and your stories?
It's an interesting question because I think in the beginning it was very challenging because, you know, Australia back there, early 70s, was not very diverse.
No,
you know,
it wasn't.
Not the diversity we have today. We've got this mix of cultures and we kind of are accepting of it and, you know, we know that that's what makes our world. But back there as a child, you know, you end up in a school and, as you say, you've come from a country where you're one colour and that's the colour that everyone is, and then you come to another country and you're totally standing out.
Yeah. Wow.
And so... That journey was really about, for me, I suppose, about being loved and accepted. You know, how do you do that? How do you fit in with others? How do you learn a different way of being?
What a great skill to learn at such a young age, though.
A challenging skill.
How that's helpful now and where you are now.
Definitely.
But what a gift. I know it would have been tough being singled out, if you like, and being maybe the only kid, you know, with your colour skin perhaps in your classroom or even in the school. And just having that, being that different, but the gift that it's given you and how that can translate into what you offer now is very powerful.
Definitely. And it comes out a lot in my work.
Yeah.
I think one of the, you know, the key stories I remember as a child was, you know, looking for friends. You know, we all needed friends at that time, you know, when you're very young, and I was desperate to fit in and be accepted. And one day there was a big knock at the door and one of the kids in the street, who I called my arch nemesis. I don't know whether a 5 or 6 year old can have an arch nemesis.
Yes,
is that
absolutely,
okay?
Absolutely, for sure.
But he was the one who really stirred
pushed
up. You know, if you talk about bullies and pushing, also my biggest teacher, I found out later
absolutely.
In life.
Absolutely.
But called me up, said, Les, you know, come on down the street. We want to, you know, want to play with you. We've got a game. And so he called me down, ended up at this house. And next thing you know, little Les is being blindfolded and told to go find a ball in the backyard. There must have been about 15, 20 kids that day in that place, and they all knew the game because it wasn't too long before little Les found himself barefoot in some freshly made doggy doo.
I
don't
cruel.
Know if you've ever had that experience.
Yes.
I advise you not to
have
that
been,
experience.
I've been blindfolded, but not in that way.
That day was a real shifting, a turning point because, you know, while that little Les back then ran off home, you know, totally upset, crying, everything else, something shifted inside because I realised then I never wanted that to happen to anyone else.
So that woke up the fire in you and the justice
and the defining, you know, moment of going, hey.
Because there's so many inner childs running around out there in adult bodies that are really needing that type of healing and that's what you can share with.
And it's seeing the gift
people.
In it. I mean, obviously as children you don't see that, but as you grow up as an adult you go, wow. I mean, a lot of the speaking I do today is based on that experience.
Yeah. I mean, once you can see the gift in something that's really, really traumatic and negative, firstly it releases that from you and you can let it go, but it moves you forward.
It does.
It doesn't keep you stuck.
Yeah. Gets us out of that victim kind of consciousness mode and going, hey, hold on, you know, there's something here. And if you look at most great people in life, you know, leaders, others, they've all had experiences that really define their character. And I think that's the interesting thing I love about life and love working with people with, is seeing where did those stories and that character come from.
Yeah.
Well, that's just fabulous. It's a wonderful beginning to the story. Now, you've also chosen Shape of You. We love this one.
Song.
Ed Sheeran.
Good old Ed Sheeran.
Shape of You, Ed Sheeran. You're on 98.7 FM. Your story counts with Nan and Simone. We're heading for a top of 13 degrees, and in the studio we have Les Price.
We've been nattering on about the first part of your story, and that particular what actually happened to you as a kid, and that was all about you. Basically being born in Nairobi because of your great grandfather. Your great-grandfather actually came over from India to Africa because there were so many opportunities, and those opportunities really gave
your family a chance.
Sorry, the microphone's just coming in and off. It's fun, isn't it? Community radio?
It's right. Popping in and out.
Yeah.
So basically then you found yourself, travelling up and down the east coast of Africa, but then found yourself back here in Chelsea, the age of about 2.5. Really exposing people to different cultures of
being you, basically. Tell us a little bit more about what you did with your career and where it all headed from there.
Yeah, my career was an interesting one because, I suppose like a lot of children, I really didn't know what I wanted to do. I ended up at Monash University, studying a science degree and doing various different things within that. But it was only in the third year that I kind of got drawn to IT. And obviously we think back there in the 80s, it was all quite new. I remember having the old Commodore 64 and all that. We look back now and we think, how far have we come?
Mm.
But back then it was a big thing. And so I kind of got drawn into that. And I think it's because I had a very logical mind, a very problem-solving mind, and it just kind of naturally fitted. And so I ended up kind of graduating with an IT degree. But I suppose in the background, there was always part of me that knew there was something more than this left brain. There was, this right brain as well, this other part of us. And I also remember, as a child, probably about 8 years old, being very intrigued by, things were a bit mystical. Like I used to watch Uri Geller on the TV, and I don't know whether you remember him.
Israeli,
mentalist, and I'm thinking, how does he do that? How does he bend those spoons? How does, I used to take watches and hold them in front of the TV, and they used to stop. And I used to think, wow, what's that? And so there was always this magical, this interest in magic and illusion and this whole aspect that, what if there's more to us? And my initial career really started IT, and I spent 16 years travelling around the world working in Japan.
And very successful in it too, hey?
Oh, yeah, it was great because my passion was for travel and I love travel, and in my career I got to do that and be, in various different roles from management and consulting and training and working in Japan, spent 6 years in Europe and England and, Holland and Italy and America. And so I had a ball doing that and, it was great. It was a great journey.
And then you found a little bit more about, your purpose, didn't you?
Yes.
Good old Tony Robbins. I think he's responsible for a lot of people making massive shifts in their careers.
Tony Robbins was an interesting one. I remember living in England and I was playing volleyball back then in Cambridge because, that's what you do in Cambridge. If you don't fit into the university in Cambridge, you've got to kind of find something else to do. And it's a great way to meet people. So join the rowing club, join the volleyball club. And we used to travel around and I met a lady one day at a tournament and she looked at me and she was listening to the way I was speaking and she says, have you done Tony Robbins' course? Have you done that? You sound like you have. I said, no, who's he? And so that led on a whole journey and went over and did quite a few of Tony's programs. But it was probably in 96, I remember the probably most defining moment. I'm there in Hawaii because he has all these events at these major, hotels. And, we've done a massive 50-foot firewalk.
Yes, you do.
Without getting burnt, mind.
Wow,
well,
I was going to ask you that.
And, you're one of the lucky ones then.
I was, actually. I found that out later when we used to help him in Singapore. We flew over to Singapore 1 year, and if I looked at the number of people who actually got sunburns, it was quite a few out of 5,000.
Mm.
But anyway, ended up that night, and I'm sitting out there, as you do, because it's a big day, 2 o'clock in the morning, staring at the stars outside this hotel room, no one else around, going, what am I doing? I've got this great job, I'm earning this big income, I've got a great partner, everything's flowing well, but something in my heart was just missing. And it really pushed me. It was like, I need to do what I'm here to do, which was really serving and helping people. And yet I was making money for somebody else. And so 2 o'clock in the morning, it probably wasn't an expected call to my boss back in Melbourne, but I was resigning.
Wow.
And I didn't know why. It was just like, I have to leave this.
Yeah.
This isn't me. So
that was very brave.
It was brave, or how do I put it? When people get impassionate, passionate about something, and they make
inspired
unrational decisions, and you say it's inspired, but it's actually really you've just jumped off the boat.
Yeah.
It reminds me of Jerry Maguire,
Show Me the Money.
where he writes that mission statement at the beginning. He gets all excited and he goes, gee, what have I done?
It's one of
those moments. But for sure. It was meant to be, and that led me on a whole new journey then.
Fantastic. Mm. Yeah, it must have been that moment, you know, when you wake up in the morning and go, did I really do that? Or did I just dream it? So what happened then? Because you got involved with Tony Robbins too, didn't you? I mean, you were helping facilitate some of his programs.
I'd done most of his programs, ended up doing his trainer academy in San Diego and spent about 4 or 5 years. You know, we were really heavily involved in supporting a lot of that. And it really fueled us going in, my partner and myself going in and starting our own business. So we really ended up doing a lot of coaching and mentoring and training. I retrained as a hypnotherapist and NLP practitioner. And
I'm one of those.
And through that journey was really understanding people and starting to get... But it was the work that I was passionate about. Yeah. It was the work of change, transformation and...
It was filling your love tank.
Yeah, and really getting to the core of, you know, who we are as souls, as human beings. So great journey to get involved with.
So you came back home all inspired, is that right? And thought, well, we need to do this in Australia as well.
We need to do it in Australia, but at the same time it spurred something in me that that was what I was here to do. Not necessarily what Tony was doing, but doing it in a different way.
Your own way
and relating back to that journey of being that kid back in the doggy and thinking, I don't want people to feel that again. I know so many people carry that stuff around and so we've got the doggy do on our feet. What do? We normally put socks on top. We cover it up. And then we've got all these layers of socks.
Well, there's all this protection.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
covering all that hurt.
Covering it all up and yet it's still there.
Exactly. You just have to poke the bear a little bit and it comes out.
You can tell that we've got life coaches in the room, can't we?
We do. We get excited about this stuff. I'm sorry. Sorry, guys. We do, don't we? Because it's like, wow.
We're in a love bubble right now.
Yeah, for sure.
In a passion bubble.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it is exciting. I think when you feel that liberation in people, when you clear away those layers, you know, and you see them just light up and find their thing and their mojo and you know, the passion, the excitement, it's liberating. I mean,
and it's what gets you up in the morning.
That's why we do what we do every day.
Exactly.
You know.
Exactly.
Hey, we've got another one of your songs, Love My Life.
Great song.
Good on Robbie. We love Robbie.
Good on Robbie Williams. We'll talk about his life.
Yeah. Let's go.
I love my life, Robbie Williams. You're on 98.7 FM, Your Story Counts with Nan and Simone. What a beautiful song.
Yeah, I love Robbie.
Yeah, I love my life.
All right. So we've been natting with Les Price today, and he's been telling us about his journey that started in Nairobi, ended in Chelsea.
Melbourne.
That's right. But he's also travelled extensively all around the world, not only as an IT professional, but then found his real calling. He even, you know, facilitated some of Tony Robbins, you know, workshops and, big events of 5,000 people and people walking across hot coals, some of them making it okay, some not so good. And also then decided to come back to Australia and really start implementing some of these programs over here to help people find their thing, you know, and clear some of those layers. And he's been doing that ever since.
Yeah.
Now, so where are we at? At this point, because you're busy doing workshops, writing, one-on-one coaching,
written a book,
intuitive healing.
Yeah, exactly. It's been a big journey. I think one of the things with life, and it's a bit like Robbie, if we go back to Robbie, you know, he's a very colourful character, isn't he?
But
it's the whole experience that life takes you through this journey, and it's what you do make of it and where you come out. Like for him to write a song like that, you know, I'm beautiful, I'm powerful, I'm free. Takes a lot of inspiration and for him to own it as well. And I suppose it kind of leads into where I am, is really been about owning this whole journey now. And so a lot of the work I'm doing at the moment is really about helping people bring out their light, about standing in their own greatness, connecting them to that deeper aspect of who they are. And it's really come from a lot of spiritual work, which I've done not only on myself, but at the same time over the last probably 15 years, having sat in different development groups and spiritual groups and being a medium and intuitive, I get to do a lot of platform work. So normally in front of people, connecting them with their loved ones and bringing through messages. And while that's not normally the main thing that I feel I'm here to do, somehow I've ended up doing it and it's a gift. But at the same time, there's huge lessons in that, because when people's loved ones do come through and they want to connect, they talk about the simple things. They talk about the little things in life that are most important that they miss.
Mm.
And we take it for granted. You know, we've got all these stresses and pressures and we forget those little things. And how do we connect back? And they're always reminding people of who they really are.
Yeah.
You know, don't forget that deep within you, there's something deeper, there's a gift, there's something more. And I suppose the work that I do now is really about, you know, helping people bring that out, whether it's through speaking, through coaching, whether it's with the business owners I work with, and really helping them awaken their light and stand in their own power again.
Because that's such a gift that you have, because when I was doing coaching full time, I'd have clients that were stuck because they had unresolved issues with one of their family members. So I would send them off to a very good clairvoyant, and they would bring in the family member to have that healing process happen, to make that shift so they could let it go and move on and not be stuck anymore. And you are the full package, which I think is amazing.
It's an interesting you mention that, because I think for a lot of people we have a lot of stuff that's still being held through our ancestral lines.
Yes.
And so in a lot of the work I do too, they do come in, and it's also through, you know, past life work. We're dealing with that because we are kind of the outcome. If I look at through my grandfather's and my mother's side, you know, they've all had different challenges.
Exactly.
And I'm the one, you know, we're at the point where we're doing the healing, the clearing of it to release those things and to accept what was great about them.
Mm.
You know, the real character traits they brought through that who made us who we are.
Yeah.
So you're right about that. It's an interesting one. And I think the Hawaiians, you know, say, well, the Hawaiian kahunas, because they believe in these Aka cords, or these cords of energy that go back through that our ancestors bring through. And so they'll do a lot of ritual around releasing that for the ancestors and knowing that they're doing it really for themselves.
And that's what we need to be doing more here. Like we don't have those sort of traditions, do we?
Aboriginals, indigenous cultures, you know, they embrace that aspect.
Yeah.
So it's very important. I think it's something that's missing in our culture here. Western cultures, you know, have kind of lost that connection. We're slowly trying to get it back and just learning that how important that is.
Yeah. And I guess we've lost the storyteller aspect of ourselves, haven't we? Like when we talk about some of those sort of tribal energies, they love to tell stories about their ancestors so that that memory continues on, which then allows you to connect with who you are a little bit better.
Exactly.
But if those stories get lost, you don't really know, you know, where some of those characteristics of yourself came from, or some of those gifts or skills.
Exactly, yeah. So it's an important gift.
Yeah.
Now, just recently I took a few days off in Dalesford just to chill out, and while I was there, I was speaking to a few people about, you know, Aboriginal history around that area, and, you know, they mentioned to me, isn't it interesting how a lot of Aboriginal art with the dot art is always painted with a view from above? It's like they come in with a different perspective than we, you know, Western societies are always 2D. They're looking like at a different viewpoint.
Yeah, different perspective.
A higher level to see the whole story of how things are unfolding.
Yeah, so that's something to think about.
Exactly.
So it must have been quite challenging, I can imagine. A lot of courage required the first time you had to sort of get up on the podium. Do you know what I mean? And bring in, you know, all those ancestors and kind of, you know, I guess it's more about being the conductor of the orchestra, isn't it?
I say it's the most challenging gig in the world. And the reason is, like, you can do a talk. I've got to do a talk for a big council next week. I can plan it. I can think about it. I know what I'm going to say. When you do that sort of work, you're actually standing in front of an audience and you just have to trust. And that's what it's really taught me is, how do we trust? How do we stand in our own power? Because you don't know who you're coming to. Mm. Sometimes you don't know who you've got through and what you're going to share. You've just got to turn up,
be the vehicle,
and open your mouth and hope something will come through, and then build the courage and evidence after. So it's really been that. And I think last year, because you were at my book launch, which
absolutely
was great, and that launch, but the book launch was a big thing for me because it was the first, it was almost like a coming out.
Yeah.
Because a lot of my family didn't know I did this other work.
Wow.
They knew I did business stuff.
And
they didn't really know.
They were comfortable with that.
Exactly. Yeah. And they didn't really know what I did. Mm. But for them to see both parts, and it was like, hold on, this is who I am. So the book, while it's there, it's very symbolic of my journey of bringing both spirit, business, the whole fact that we're energetic beings and our businesses are energetic, and putting it out there that you can make a shift through that.
Yeah. So how did your family respond when they got to hear all about you? Like all of you?
I think seriously, some of them are still getting used to it. Like they kind of, we know. Thank you for that. We know what you're doing, but we don't really know.
Yeah. But they would be more into it, wouldn't they? Than
they are. No,
I've had Aussie parents.
I've actually had a few family members and relatives now sitting in some of my courses and groups. Do you know what I mean? So I see that shift that they're opening up. So it's a good opening for them. But I feel that I'm here to shift that whole paradigm. Like, while, you know, I honour my culture and ancestry, I'm here to also shift some of that mindset too.
Mm.
And I think that's where we're going as a society, you know. It's about shifting our consciousness.
Yes.
So the book is called Awakening the Heart of Business. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, for years I'd worked with different business owners and people in business and coaching them, mentoring them and doing lots of training. But what I realised is there was something usually missing, and it was these days more people are getting called to run heart-centred businesses. Mm. They don't just want to make business for money. They actually want to do it with a purpose and in a way that actually contributes back to making a bigger and more significant difference in the world. And so the book was really written for people who had a big vision, a big heart, want to make a bigger difference. And initially when I even put it through a peer group and one of my mentors in the writing area, you know, they all came back to me and said, oh, you can't write about that. And it was like I had to kind of be strong with what I wanted to write about. Mm. But I did have to change things. Like, for example, the whole cover got changed. You know, the initial one that came out was a bit too feminine, spiritual and new age. And I took that feedback and realised, yeah, that's not what it's about.
Mm.
It's more balance. It's for people. It's for men and women, but it's for people who are opening up. And so it was a journey in writing it. It was a journey in putting it together. It was, you know, I think for any author, when you write your first book, it's your first baby. But at the same time, I'm sitting there writing it and I'm already getting the next one coming through. And it's like, oh,
just channeling, just download it.
Exactly. That's what needs to be done. So
there needs to be two of you.
It does.
Well, he's got more than two of them in there.
There's a whole tribe.
There's a spiritual tribe there.
And they're pretty noisy bunch too, aren't they?
And they're just giving him information all the time. It's exhausting. I'm hearing it.
I know. Yeah, you can see it. But one of the quotes I love that you downloaded was, find the intersection between your highest work, serving from the heart, and living from your authentic spirit, then money will flow.
Yeah. It's an interesting point because it's what I call the G-spot. You can call it the greatness spot or the God spot. You know, everybody gets excited when
I know. Well,
when I told them there's a chapter in the book about finding your G-spot, but it's not about that. It's about really connecting with that own inner sense of greatness, that authenticity where things flow. And you find that, you know, watch a Jamie Oliver cook. Amazing. You know, watch people who love their singing and their craft and have found a way to do their purpose, live it on purpose and create money doing what they love. And I really honour that. So that's why that quote came through.
It's a big one, and so many people, particularly the new generation,
they want everything
now. Love that idea.
Instant gratification, though, they're caught between that though and hard work.
Yeah, but I, you know what, I think that's okay. I think that's evolution, and as long as that they are prepared to keep, like you say, you know, walking the talk, you know, and keep pushing through and not giving up. Why not? Why do it hard? But I mean, you think about, I mean, you did your master's in entrepreneurship, didn't you? So you've certainly done some study as well, but you know, you think about Thank You Water as a case study, you know, and that was that generation, wasn't it, where they just were driven by their heart. I mean, a lot of what they did, they were certainly not qualified to do. They basically kind of created it through an oily rag as well as a lot of hope and I think, you know, run by the seat of the pants, didn't they? But they've done it, you know.
And,
they
know,
have done it. What a great case study.
I think, you know, this whole social enterprise side of things where we can create a thriving business but do it in a way that actually does make a difference. It's growing, and obviously there's still businesses out there will continue to run unethically and do all sorts of things. But at the same time, you're right that the younger generation are connecting with more heart. They're wanting to do things with more meaning and purpose. And it's not just necessarily about having a career or job or money, because they're going to change careers so many times and have so many different types of jobs.
That's right.
More so than like my father, who worked for 30 years for the same company.
Longevity, staying in one place is not.
So we're slowly opening up. You know, I said I'm doing a whole thing for Deakin University this afternoon, and all the students there, they are really wanting to do things from a bigger level that gives them meaning and purpose, but still allows them to contribute. And it's a great thing to see.
They'd love your book. I think there's a lot of questions in there too that are very grounded questions. So it's like you say, it's not kind of up there with the rainbows and butterflies. There's some really strong kind of self-insightful, you know, posing yourself those sort of questions that make you think, well, why are you running this business, or why are you in this job, or, you know, how aligned are you with the money that you're earning?
Exactly. And the key point there that I'm just drawn to at the moment is about message. And I feel that every person has a message.
Yeah.
it's funny that a lot of people I work with, not all of them see themselves as leaders, yet we are here to influence, we are here to make a difference. And the core of it is finding your message. If you can get to the heart of that, what you're really here to do, what you're about, and share that in an authentic way that touches people's lives, it's a powerful thing. Whether you make money out of it or not, it's a powerful thing to do because you're living fully your destiny, you're living fully your purpose. So that was a key part of writing the book too.
Mm. And so are you doing workshops around this book? Or
I've got a couple of workshops that I run around on a regular basis. So they, you know, every couple of months we're running a new course that kind of facilitates that. And just about to launch a big new business network, which is more for conscious, you know, heart-driven, purpose-driven leaders, aspiring individuals to really connect with their own sense of their own greatness and actually get that out in the world, because I feel that's my next journey is bringing them together. It's very hard to do it on your own, and we all need environment, we all need people around us that support that. But I see the light in people when they come in and I can see what they're here to do. It's usually getting themselves out of their own way and allowing that to happen. And we never had the role models that allowed us to feel that strength and, you know, the acknowledgement and to get that out. So that's the next little job that they've got in store for me.
Yeah, fabulous. Mm. You know, with the corporate, because obviously you do a lot of corporate work as well, are you finding that they're more open to this kind of conversation, these kind of words, ways of expressing yourself?
I think they have come a long way. You know, years ago, John McFarlane, who was the CEO of ANZ, I mean, he'd brought in a lot of this and it kind of got rejected in the whole organisation. People didn't like it. But I feel more and more now you're finding people around, and I get a lot of clients come in who are different levels. They're wanting that. They're wanting the intuitive as well as the practical. They're open much more to that sort of coaching, mentoring approach than maybe they were years ago, because they know it's not just all about
woo-woo.
One side.
Yeah, but it's not woo-woo.
It's not woo-woo. It's actually, you know, it's look woo-woo. At what Google, Google investing millions of dollars in meditation programs and mindfulness and giving people time to do that. So it's become more mainstream than you believe. And it actually helps open up their creativity, their innovation, their entrepreneurship. So
yeah, I think they're really focusing on the more of the emotional EQ and social EQ.
Absolutely.
Well, as I say, you know, we've gone through the information age, we've gone through the manufacturing industrial age, it's now the intuitive age. Yeah. And we have to keep up with the change and the chaos. We have to just trust and be tuned into our higher self intuition and be making choices and decisions, whether we're in business or corporate or wherever. And that's where it's going to head to. And so
it's that accountability and responsibility and knowing yourself.
Exactly. It's interesting how many executives have their life coach or their healer.
Yeah.
But they don't tell anyone.
No, it's a big secret.
It's a big secret, but they'll tell you quietly that's how they've manifested their opportunities.
Yeah.
By having someone there that's kind of, you know,
supporting them, the wind beneath their wings.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. And aligning them and balancing them. Everyone needs it.
Yeah.
Like we've talked about, haven't we, that in tribal times, there was always, you know, the medicine man or the, you know, the head of the tribe.
Always a community.
The wise man that you could go and talk to and share, you know, how you're feeling or where you're heading or, you know, what's your purpose? You know, what do the guides, what do the spirits want from you? But with the Western world, that's sort of considered
what I find with a lot of people, especially who've reached higher levels in management corporate, they've got no one to talk to. You know, they can't feel like they can talk to their peers or others, you know, because of judgment and other things. But to have somebody who can just witness, you know, and I like that word witness, because the American Native American Indians used it a lot, was witness this story. Just sit without judgment and allow it to come out and just to reflect on it. And that in itself opens up new doors of opportunity, new ways of thinking.
Well, we actually notice that in our show when people, you know, do their homework and write down their story and afterwards they have a transformation, don't they? They have a shift.
They have a shift.
And amazing things start to happen. Because they get a better understanding of where they've been and what the gifts they've got now. And
it's just beautiful to be able to share it. I think part of the healing, isn't it, be able to share it out there and inspire others and say, you know what, I've done it. You can do it too.
Exactly.
So they've literally hopped on that train from Nairobi to Chelsea.
That's right.
Along with moving pictures.
That's right.
Moving pictures is definitely there. All right, we're going to be back in 1 minute. We just have a couple of community announcements.
You're on 98.7 FM, Your Story Counts with Nan and Simone, and we have Les Price in the studio.
Phew, Les Price.
Yeah.
A lot of my clients actually do some of your workshops, you know, and they're a combination of different things from, you know, more of that sort of speaking gig, but also that intimate group, isn't it, where you're developing their intuitive skills, which I find fascinating to see that, you know, it's not just some guru up on the stage, that they can actually do it too.
Yeah.
Which is really quite liberating for people to, again, it's that knowing. They know they've got some intuition in there, but they're not really sure how to activate
access it or to actually
believe themselves when they do get some sort of, you know, intuitive message.
That gut feeling.
Yeah. So when you're in a group, though, it's nice to be able to play with that and be supported in that and test it out a little bit. So I've heard great feedback about your workshops, the group workshops during the week. How are they running for you?
They've been great. I've been running them for about 10 years now, and so they're always evolving, always changing. But like I say to people, you know, your intuitive sense is your primary sense. It's not your sixth sense. You know, we used to think that. But it's the first thing you walk into a room, you know, you get a feeling of it, and it's trusting that. So the greatest gift that we do in these workshops is really help people trust themselves. It's about reconnecting with their own sense of soul, their spirit, so they find more purpose and direction. But at the same time, it's about trusting their own guidance. And that's one thing, you know, as children we have it, we're very naturally open, but as adults we slowly, with our education systems and
belief
fears
systems.
And beliefs and all the other, you know, doggy do, we kind of pile on top. It's there, and we have to just shift that first. So there's been some, you know, great insights just around a program recently. So you can see people shifting, and they all need to learn and grow in different ways.
Shift the doggy do.
That's maybe what I should call the next program.
That's another book.
I'm always good with the names.
That's another book.
We can throw in a poo test with it as well.
Yeah, that's
a microbiome. Because I can shift
smart
your microbiome.
That's my DNA.
That's right. Oh, my God. So just a package, an interesting package.
Workshop and poo package.
Well, and it's important. They're both important.
Exactly.
But look, I remember as a kid what you're talking about, you know, exactly the same story, being highly intuitive as a kid, you know, felt a lot of different things, but thought it was just, you know, imagine a great imagination, to now understanding later on in life how, you know, that was your truest version of yourself. But you learned how to really, I guess, accommodate the world and do what the world wants you to do and become normal.
Whatever that is.
Gave it a good go for a few years.
Normal and fitting into other people's expectations too. So that's, you know, where we kind of put a lot of limits and we stop ourselves.
Yeah, rather than just being you.
True being to shine.
Can you imagine if we had a culture where kids were allowed to harness their full potential from day one? So when little Johnny comes into the world, we purely and utterly look at what is his gift, what is his talent to the world, rather than where is he going to be successful and where is he going to have security.
Well, actually, with my son's development over the years, I always allowed his intuitive part to be expressed, so I'd never suppress it, and he would call me on stuff like he just
hard.
And rather than trying to shut him down, say no, that's not true, I had to own it and say yes, it is true, and acknowledge his intuition, because otherwise, because I didn't want to shut it down. So I was very conscious as he grew, and he's got amazing intuition now because of it, because I allowed him to express it.
So he's a wise old soul, and he could see it.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's very difficult as well, isn't it, when they call you and stuff, and they're like, oh my God, you know, you're seven.
I know, and you're calling me on my shit. I hate it. Seriously, they make you accountable.
Yeah, 100%.
So what are your key messages?
Look, my key message, I suppose, at the moment is, and it again comes from that whole experience of life, is that we do all have a gift within us. I love Marianne Williamson's quote, you know, it's our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. And I think that's the key thing, is that we're here to stand in that light. We're here to allow ourselves to really be our authentic selves. And the more we can do that, the more we trust our intuition, life just flows. And we're here to experience that. Without the limitation. So that's, you know, really what I'm passionate about for the, at least this stage, they've got me working on, and I think there'll be some more books and other work and some big workshops
exciting.
And things coming.
Fantastic.
And how can people find out about you?
They can find out just through websites, so www.lesprice.com, or if they're interested in the book, at www.awakeningtheheartofbusiness.com. And you'll find everything you need about some of the workshops and programs and books and other courses and coaching that I do.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for coming.
Such a pleasure.
Look up, you know, Awakening the Heart of Business. It's definitely worth a read. Les, been fantastic talking to you.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks for sharing your story.
Thank you very much, ladies. Great to be here.